Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday to you on the 22nd of February, 2021. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. You probably knew all that. I hope you know also that our guest today is Dr. Howie Knuth, one of my favorite people. Okay, Howie is the president of Project Achieve, and we're going to talk about effective multi-tiered systems of support, social emotional challenges, etc., regarding the pandemic for your students. Again, multi-tiered systems of support. They are needed in this crucial time. You're going to find out from Howie that it is something that is required. He's got a full course on it over at Project Achieve, which is his company at projectachieve.net. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. That is our American Consortium for Equity in Education website. Our magazine is over there, Equity in Access. You'll enjoy it. Everything we do over there is free for educators. Again, ace-ed.org, and that's also where we put all our podcasts. All right, without further ado, here's Howie. Hi, Howie. How's the weather in Arkansas?
Well, good morning, Larry. We are thawing out finally. I think we're going to have our first day fully above freezing in about 10 days. So
good.
We got hit with that snowstorm, but we're shoveling our way out of it.
Yeah, and of course all the news went over to your neighboring state, Texas. Of course,
yes.
Texarkana.
Yes.
What am I talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. And I had to think about my geography for a second. Okay, but of course you guys suffered through the same mess. What do you have, 16 inches of snow or something?
Yeah, about 16 to 20, depending on where you were. So, we'll get snow every once in a while, but it's not like New England. So.
Well, that's for sure. Do you have a snow shovel? Are you one of those guys that had race out to the hardware store to get a snow shovel, or did you even bother?
No, believe it or not, I have one. I was the only one that shoveled my driveway. But, you know, I grew up outside of Boston, so those old habits die young.
Okay, good. Or die hard anyway. What can I tell you?
Die
I'm glad
hard.
You're okay. And I'm glad you're warm again. You didn't lose power or anything, right?
No, we were good. So.
Okay, good. Arkansas, everybody, not Texas, but, well. Tell us about Project Achieve, Howie, your
well,
company.
Well, you know, I've been doing this for about 40 years. I did it for 20 years at the university, spent almost 20 years at the University of South Florida, worked for the Arkansas Department of Education for 13 years. So we've been doing this a long time, and basically we're trying to help schools to be more effective in terms of maximizing students' academic and social, emotional, behavioral outcomes. And that's really where the multi-tiered system comes in. I mean, we've got to have in all of our school districts a continuum of services and supports for kids all the way down to those that have the highest and most extreme levels of disability.
And, you know, Hal, I want to ask you something. It's interesting. You brought up social, emotional learning. Then we're talking about your long experience, 20 years in Florida, then all that time at the Arkansas Department of Education. And then you mentioned social-emotional learning. And when did it start being called social-emotional learning? When did it start to move, I'll say, to the forefront like it is now?
Well, kind of the phasing. And I mean, let's be honest, and again, with bells and whistles. I mean, we're talking about school discipline that hopefully is equitable, and we don't have disproportionate referrals to the office of kids with disabilities and minority kids.
Yep.
But we're talking
yep.
about school discipline, classroom management, but for me, teaching students social, emotional, and behavioral self-management. So for me as a school psychologist, you know, I've done this throughout my whole career. But you had phases, and so for a while the phase came in, and it's still kind of there. It's hanging on, you know, the positive behavioral supports. And then the social-emotional learning was really started probably, you know, about 20, 25 years ago. One of my good colleagues, Joe Zinn, who's now passed away, I mean, he was in on it from the very beginning, and the Yale University social-emotional group was part of it. And, you know, they've been around. CASEL has been around for the better part of 25 or 30 years. It's just that their time has kind of come right now. And so, I mean, they've emerged over especially the past 8 or 10 years. But, you know, honestly, I mean, and we've got to look at the science, and that's the most important thing. we're really talking about how do we teach kids social, emotional, and behavioral self-management. And it's got to obviously be done at a developmental level. So what you do for your preschoolers, it's going to have to be modified and adapted in terms of expectations and instructional approaches for high school.
Right, right, exactly right. And when do you first remember them calling it social-emotional learning? I'm just curious about this.
Well, again, I've been so steeped in that history, and these are all my colleagues. So, I mean, I've been aware of it, you know, probably since its origins, you know, 25-plus years ago.
Okay. So,
And
the reason I'm asking was it just kind of, you know, we always talk about it now. It's a commonplace term now, but I'm wondering if it became a commonplace term. You know, who the hell knows?
Well, I mean, part of what Castle did, and they were very smart about it, was, you know, they were working as researchers, but they were also working at the legislative level in Washington, D.C., and then they also went to the state capitals. And so what they started doing was they started getting social-emotional learning, either standards or language, into state educational statute. And so that's why it kind of emerged, kind of not so much all of a sudden, but I mean it kind of evolved. But I really want people to understand that there's a lot of people out there, just as in discipline and positive behavioral supports, there's a lot of people that are calling things social emotional learning, and it may range from social emotional light, which is not terribly research based, to, you know, things that are steeped in the research of human and child and adolescent behavior. So, I mean, a lot of people are out there, if you will, selling their wares, and what they're doing is not necessarily valid. And unfortunately, a lot of schools around the country are buying or adopting things that have not passed empirical muster. And so they're actually wasting some time, and if not working against themselves, where they're not going to get the results that they want from a student perspective that they desire. And so there's got to be a vetting process, and ultimately the consumer has to look at themselves in the mirror, meaning the school districts and the leadership, and they're going to have to do their due diligence to make sure that if they're adopting strategies, that they are proven strategies.
Right, it's so important, and again, you know, you got to pick the right place because there is a lot of stuff out there, and I guess that's all what I'm driving at. You know, we want to make sure that people get the right stuff, you know, that kind of thing, and that they understand this is not something that's just mundane and off the shelf. All right, and you've got a call. I want to just say this again: Project Achieve at projectachieve.net. That's Howie's company. Okay, has a course called Designing and Implementing Effective Multi-Tiered Systems. You've just launched this. It's a web-based course, projectachieve.net. And I think we should really start, just describe a multi-tiered system of support, because when we talk about social-emotional learning, and Howie, you brought this up a minute ago, the first thing you talked about was discipline, which I thought was interesting. So just put that all into perspective and tout your course a little bit and tell everybody what it is.
Well, sure. I mean, like I said, I mean, I've done this for 40-plus years, and not just at the university level. I mean, I've consulted all over the world, and I've worked with thousands and thousands of school districts. But, you know, especially the 13 years I spent at the Arkansas Department of Ed, when they recruited me, what we did was we used a science-based decision-making approach in terms of deciding what are the underlying reasons when students are presenting with either academic or social-emotional challenges? What are the underlying reasons? Trying to validate those reasons and then linking to the services, support, strategies, and interventions that are going to have the highest probability of success. I mean, it's no different than it taking the medical model and putting it in a school. I mean, if you're ill, you go to the doctor, and the doctor certainly does a medical history and all
of
that.
Good point.
They do a clinical interview, but at some point they're doing medical diagnostic assessments to determine why you're running 102 temperature. And then they figure out the deeper root causes, and then they come up with their medical interventions. Well, that's in contrast to the way that, unfortunately, some schools have acted and practiced over the last two or three decades, sometimes, quite honestly, guided by U.S. Department of Education and the departments of education at the state level, where sometimes what they're doing is they're playing what I call intervention roulette. So yeah. They're really not identifying the problem. They're not doing the root cause analysis. They're throwing spaghetti at the wall, and they're seeing if an intervention works or not. But the unfortunate part of intervention roulette is that the house usually wins, meaning that the interventions don't work, and every time you do an intervention, you potentially make the student more resistant to the next intervention. So we've got to do high probability of success interventions. Now, that's especially true, Larry, right now in the pandemic, because, you know, we've got a lot of kids who are certainly, you know, impacted by the pandemic, and they're demonstrating social, emotional, and behavioral needs, but we can't overgeneralize. We've got to identify individual students who have those needs, and certainly we have to work at the prevention level and raise up all of the students. But for the students that have some needs, we can't assume they're pandemic-related. They may be pandemic-related, but they may not be, and that's part of that root cause analysis. But then we've got to figure out, even if it is pandemic-related, what is the issue? What are they depressed about? What are they anxious about? What are they fearful about? Because there are a lot of different interventions that could potentially help them. We've got to come up with the right one. You know,
are the interventions, quote, the tiers, T-I-E-R-S, that you were talking about? Is that how the two relate?
That's the popular notion. The popular notion, which has never been validated, is that you've got different interventions at different tiers. What the tiers really are, it's more individualistic. The tiers are about the intensity of services and supports or interventions that student needs. Okay, but they're relative. So if I'm in a big school district and every school in my district has a social worker, a counselor, and a school psychologist, and they're trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, they can provide the students who need cognitive behavioral therapy at the doorstep. If you're in another district, let's just say, not to stereotype, that's very rural,
sure,
that doesn't have those related service resources, the student needs are the same, but they're going to have to probably go to the community mental health system or go to teletherapy in order to get those services to the student. Okay, so it's relative. So the first district, you would say, all right, if you had to slot it in, all right, well, those services from the psychologist, because they're in the school, are tier two because they're immediately available. Okay, but
yep,
for the rural school district, you might categorize those services as tier three because you have to outsource it. So there's no single convention in terms of what's tier one, two, and three. In New Mexico, and I don't know if this is still true, but in the early days of RTI and MTSS, tier three was special education services. So it's almost state by state, but the bottom line is what's the student's difficulty, why are they having the difficulty, and what do we need to do about it? So,
and who is to assess that? Who in your plan or whatever, who is to assess that?
It's at some point it's got to be a multidisciplinary team. And again, this is part of the old school problem, is that sometimes what happened is a student was having difficulty, people would look at the surface level and assume that what they saw was the difficulty, and it may have been a different difficulty. I'll give you an example.
Yeah,
and then they would put a team together to specially look at that individual student. Okay, well, again, I'll use a medical model. When you go to grand rounds at a hospital, you've got the multidisciplinary medical team. You've got the medical people, you've got the specialists, you've got the radiologists, you've got the social worker, you've got the nutritionists. They sit as a body. They are a standing committee. So in a school, when we have a student with a difficulty, if it's at a significant level, it should go to the building level multidisciplinary team. But here's the example. There are times where we have students in our classrooms who are behaviorally acting out because of academic frustration. We have other students, conversely, who have academic problems because of social, emotional, or behavioral root causes. Okay. Now, the first student looks like a behavior problem, but the root cause is an academic issue. So you've got to have that multidisciplinary team so that at the beginning of the process, you're getting the right questions on the table so that early on you can discriminate, you know, is this an academic, a behavioral, or a combined issue? If you take that student who's behaviorally acting out, albeit for academic reasons, but if you say, all right, that's a behavioral issue, so we're only going to convene our behavioral specialists, then the right questions are not going to be asked. They're going to only ask behavioral questions, and they'll miss the fact that the reason why the student is acting out is because of academic skill gaps.
So Howie, then I must beg the question. Your use of the medical analogy is very, very good, okay? But schools, and I know you're advocating for this, schools aren't set up like that per se, okay? Where are we going to get these team members and the time? And I'm asking this seriously, especially post-pandemic when more kids than ever are going to need a lot of help. Okay, how do we move forward to build a system like this? And I mean, you said it before. You know, some school districts, you know, they're set up. A very wealthy suburban school district is going to have less problem with this. Okay, but you go into a big urban district that's already suffering, or you go into a small rural district. All right, they're not set up for this. They don't have that staff. Okay, and the more rural you go, the less community support. I had to say it, and I live out in rural America here. The less community, they're stressed too. So where do we find, how do we build this team, okay, to be able to do this?
All right, and let me go backwards to go forward. These are some of the things that I talk about in this course. I mean, what I did, you know, and some of this is pandemic related. You know, I've been sitting at home and doing all my virtual consulting. I'm still incredibly busy. I've got school districts that I'm working with all over the country. Okay, but I said, all right, how do I pull all this stuff together, everything that I've learned for the past 40 years, and put it in a package that is time effective? I mean, it's not an extensive. It's seven sessions and a couple of bonus sessions. Okay, but how do I put this in a package so I can answer questions like this, Larry? All right, so to answer your question, first of all, the federal government, you know, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act requires multi-tiered systems of support, okay? It's in the federal law, okay? We also know that in the special ed law that there's got to be multidisciplinary teams to evaluate students relative to special ed eligibility and then to provide services if they're found eligible. So every school district in the country, I'm working right now in school districts that are as rural as where you live, okay?
Okay.
I've worked 5 years in Appalachia, okay, just finished a five-year grant. I've got a five-year grant right now in the Thumb of Michigan, one in eastern Oklahoma, okay? And these are we're talking about schools that have 250 kids in the entire district. They have counselors. They've got speech pathologists. They've got, and sometimes they have to contract for them. But to a large degree, these people are already there because, again, federal special ed law, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act that requires the multi-tiered. Do they have to tap into community-based resources or regional resources or virtual resources? Absolutely. But, I mean, we've got to help solve these kids' problems. Okay, we've got to build the prevention system to get there. So the personnel, I mean, we always need more people, but, you know, the personnel are there. The issue becomes, are they working in a smart way? And what's happened is so many different ways and approaches to do MTSS, multi-tiered systems, are out there. Even the federal government, the MTSS system for the federal government is a framework. It's a menu. And what happens is districts don't always know what are the critical components that they need to do to make their system work. There's also got to be professional development because we've got to raise our game up in terms of some of the newer issues. I mean, we didn't have a pandemic, 12 months ago.
That's right.
So are there
Are
there pandemic-related things that schools need to know and understand? Absolutely. The teachers are learning how to teach virtually right now where they never knew how to do that. We've got to raise our game. That's the professional development process. But what we've got to do, conversely, is we can't waste time or adopt procedures that are not going to get us the outcomes, the return on investment.
Exactly.
There are a lot of people
exactly.
running around and with all good intents, and they're selling their wares. Okay, they don't have the experience of how do you retrofit a system into a rural community, into a suburban, into an urban. Okay, and I'm not putting myself on a pedestal here, okay? But, you know, I've been doing this, and I've done it at all sorts of different levels, and we've got it down to the research foundation that gets the practice that gets us the outcomes. So pulling the multidisciplinary team is not as challenging as you think. Are you going to have gaps of time? Yeah, but you can fill those gaps. The issue becomes, are we working smart so that we're getting the student outcomes that we want?
Right. It's very hard. It's actually, if I may go back to what we do here, it's really an equity issue. Kids individually, okay, or kids, if we have to, as a group of some sort, okay, are going to have people who are in serious poverty, okay,
sure.
during this pandemic, okay, especially if you're of color. All right, you may have had serious loss within the pandemic itself of your family, et cetera. So, you know, it's a matter of equity. Kids who don't have those challenges are going to have a much greater advantage than those who don't, okay? So my question, Howie, is, and this is a tough question, what kind of outcomes are we looking for, okay? What's the outcome that we can expect from all this? And that's a tough question. I don't even know if it's a legitimate one. Is it?
Well, no, it is a legitimate one. I mean, the big picture outcomes is we want to graduate students who are able to either go to college or go into the workplace and be productive and have a good
right.
life and be able to raise the next generation where hopefully, you know, they are able to attain the things that they want with, you know, in the most preventative way. But down to the micro level, I mean, we want to help kids to learn and master their academic material from preschool through high school so that they are able to graduate, but again, in a progressive way. They're able to read, they're able to write and communicate, they're able to do math, they're able to apply it to science and social studies. So, I mean, we want to help kids to be able to academically progress and maximize what they bring to the table. Because kids bring different things to the table for different reasons. On the social, emotional, and behavioral, we want kids, quite honestly, the outcomes are we want kids to, again, progressively learn and demonstrate interpersonal skills, social problem-solving skills, conflict prevention and resolution skills, and emotional control, communication, and coping skills. You know, and then we can drill that down to specific behaviors or specific, you know, mathematical algorithms in the scope and sequence. But that's what we're all trying to accomplish. Now, some kids come to the table and the table's not equal. And so we've got to kind of deal. We've got to deal with that. But, you know, again, I want to go back to your other question in terms of how do we find the time? Sometimes it's not about finding the time, Larry. It's about prioritizing the time, okay?
Okay.
I mean, if you've got a parent, and the parent is in the hospital and they're in the intensive care unit, you don't want your parent's team of medical people to get together before hospital hours or after hospital hours when some of the people can't get to the meeting or they have other things that they have to do or childcare or whatever. If your parent is in the intensive care, you want that medical team convening during hospital hours as soon as they need to convene. That's the priority. But that's not what happens in schools sometimes. In schools sometimes, the multi-tiered team, the multidisciplinary building level team, meets before school, or it meets after school, or doesn't meet at all.
Yeah.
And so we're not prioritizing, but the downside is if we don't find the highest probability of success interventions for our students, then we're still investing the time, but it's the classroom teacher that's investing the time, and sometimes they're not able to succeed with that student because they don't know what to do with that student. So the student doesn't lose the time, but what they lose is they lose the success because they're not getting the prioritized services.
You know, and you segue beautifully. My next question was going to ask you, what is the role of the classroom teacher in all this? All right, because when I hear you speak, okay, I think to myself, and I don't know whether you actually are saying this, you know, that it's the administrator's role to gather the folks and make sure that every kid, okay, has what they need in a multi-tiered system of support, okay? And I don't know if you're actually saying that, but that's the picture in my head. So tell me if I'm right there, but then what's the classroom teacher's role in all this? Howie.
Well, you are right, because, I mean, it is the administrator, as the educational leader of the school, it is the administrator's responsibility to convene, and I don't like to play this card, but it's their legal responsibility to convene the team and make sure that the multi-tiered system is there. But the classroom teacher is a full partner in this process. And again, the first step of our approach to the multi-tiered system, this continuum of services and supports, okay, step one is an effective classroom teacher who's doing effective differentiated instruction, demonstrating and utilizing effective classroom management and being able to serve as many students as possible. So the classroom teacher is step one of the multi-tiered process. And it's not to put more of a burden on them. That's how it always has been. Because the bottom line, and I'm not trying to be ugly here, Larry, okay? But if you have ineffective
instruction... You're a fine-looking man, Howie. You couldn't be ugly if you wanted to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you've got ineffective instruction in the classroom, okay, then students are not going to succeed. They're going to tag team up to the next year, and the gap of instruction or the gap of behavior sometimes is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then we're going to need more strategic services to that student, okay? But if the root cause is ineffective instruction, and again, let me just bipolarize it, okay? You've got two types of ineffective instruction. The typical ineffective instruction is where teachers have students that have, you know, needs, but they've never been trained to be able to work with those kind of kids, or the issues that those kids present in the classroom. They need consultation. The teacher needs consultation to be able to be effective. And the point is, I'm a psychologist, okay? But there are certain elements of psychological pathology that I'm not trained and skilled to work with. So I'm not going to work outside of my band of expertise, okay? So if I did that, I would be ineffective. Classroom teachers don't have a choice of who comes into their classroom. Sometimes they have students with different needs that they're just not prepared, and with consultation, they can be more prepared. So we can help teachers to be effective in areas that they have to deal with students that they've never dealt with before.
That's cool. So let me ask you this then, which was my next question, which is an important question. I mentioned you got this course, web-based course, okay, 7 sessions, et cetera, at projectachieve.net. Who do you want to go to that course? Who should be going? And let me ask it this way. Should a school district call you and set up all their teachers for it? Talk to me about that. Who should go to this thing? Who should sign up?
I think... first and foremost, it should be the administrators, the related service people, the special service people who are on the multidisciplinary team. I think they start with the course, and then we kind of spiral in to which sections of the course are best for the classroom teachers. But, I mean, this is designed both from a big picture and a small picture. Some of the sessions talk about how do you implement this based on a needs assessment in a school. But there are two sessions on, there's one whole session on social, emotional, and behavioral interventions, and another one on academic interventions with, you know, literacy and math highlighted.
Yep.
But, I mean, I think the course starts with your multidisciplinary team, and you're at the district level and the school level, and then we can decide, you know, which elements of the course would be useful for the classroom teachers, okay? But, you know, I mean, relative to the classroom teachers, they've got to do the effective instruction, or we've got to support them to do the effective instruction. And if we don't, then we end up with what I call instructional casualties. So there are kids that if they had a different teacher or instructional approach, they would be successful, but they got this teacher and instructional approach, and so not so much. Let me do this kind of from a pandemic perspective. All right. One of the things that we're hearing about, and we're starting to get data, is that there's going to be a pandemic slide or a pandemic academic gap. Well, yeah, the probabilities that is true are absolutely evident. The question is, which students have the gap? I mean, we're going to have to individualize this.
Yeah.
So,
great
which
point.
Students have the gap? And is the gap attributed to something that occurred during the pandemic? In many cases, the pandemic-related academic gaps are going to be instructional. It's not going to be about kids who couldn't have learned. It's going to be about kids who didn't have the opportunity to learn, maybe because they were not getting, from a virtual perspective, the kind of instruction that they needed to get.
Right.
But that's
right.
Not to blame the teachers. The teachers were doing the best they could virtually.
That's right.
It's just that the instruction is better face-to-face for certain elements of the academic program. So right now, what's going to happen? Next year, the next 5 or 8 years, we're going to have a lot of instructional casualty kids who are going to need additional services. But part of the services that the school is going to have to deal with is they're going to have to deal with how do we teach kids right now, how do we teach kids this coming fall at their instructional level?
Yeah.
How do we're going to have to throw out the pacing charts. We're going to have to throw out the proficiency test dominance. Okay, because if we're teaching to the proficiency test, a lot of our kids are already 6 or 8 months behind.
That's right.
You can't catch them up.
Right.
So we're going to have some recalibration of what we're doing instructionally in the school, because if we continue to teach to the test for the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to have more kids that fail academically, more need for services that, honestly, if we recalibrated, we wouldn't have a need for. We're going to create student academic issues if we don't recalibrate the system come fall.
What do you hear about people actually doing that, Howie? Are they actually starting to look at recalibrating?
Well, I think the schools are doing it. I'm not sure that the departments of education are doing it, quite honestly.
Well, same thing. I mean, the departments of education,
a lot of them right now are saying either we're not going to do the state proficiency test or we're going to do the state proficiency test, but, quote, it's not going to count. But when the State Department of Education is counting it, they're talking about whether they're counting it relative to the school being in school improvement status. But we've got to remember, we've got hundreds of thousands of teachers across this country right now that the proficiency test results of the kids are impacting their teacher evaluations. And so we've got to recalibrate that. That's got to be taken off the table. Every state in this country has got to unpass and rethink the teacher evaluation and the educator evaluation process. Because right now, for the next generation, if we're going to evaluate teachers based on the kids' academic performance and we don't change the standards relative to the proficiency test, That's not going to work, and it's not. That's not going to be equitable. If you want to talk about equity, that's not
fair. Agree.
That's not fair to teachers.
Right. I think most of the school districts, I'm hoping. Anyway, would you think they'll be back in the fall? That's what everybody seems to be looking at, right?
It
I wonder
seems
where we're going to be.
Yeah, it seems to be, but strategically, I'm encouraging all my districts. They've got a plan for multiple opportunities and options.
Yeah.
So they're still going to have to plan for the virtual option, just as, you know, as a safety net and hope for the best. I mean, that's just good strategic planning.
Yeah, that's really just so tough out there. What's going to come down the pike? That's why your course is so important, and I really appreciate this, Howie. This is great. Okay,
yeah.
I'll let everybody know where it is. It's just so much to think about, okay? And you know, to get this right in a time of such incredible pressure. The pressure's going to be – it was bad enough before, let me say it that way.
Yes.
And now look at what we're going to have. My God, it's just unbelievable. And you've got to get these kids, if I may just use a simple term, reorganized as we get them back. It's not that easy just to walk back into the classroom and, it's like we left – it's now March 14th, 2020. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's not the way it works, you know? Unbelievable.
Yep.
Speaking of that, we're almost at a year out from this thing. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
You know, Larry, we can do this, okay? I mean,
of course
the teachers across the country, they have done a phenomenal job.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was on,
I agree with you
more. I was on five different teacher calls, Zoom calls last week, okay? And I'm talking to teachers in the schools that I'm consulting all the time.
Sure.
These teachers, they're dedicated, they are creative, they are focused on the kids, they are doing a phenomenal job. So, I mean,
pretty
with
amazing,
them
huh?
as a foundation, oh, yeah, we can do this. When I talk to the kids across the country, the kids understand the impact of the pandemic, but they are so glad that they've got the support systems both at home and within the school. So, yeah, are we going to have challenges? Absolutely. But if we can use the science and blend and sprinkle in some common sense, we've got to have some common sense to this, then I think there's no reason why we can't accomplish the things that we want to accomplish. It's simply, it just may take us a little bit more time.
We'll leave it on that high note, okay? And it is a high note. Howie, thank you, okay? You're a good man, my friend, Dr. Knopf.
My pleasure.
All right,
my
and pleasure. Stay warm down there. It'll get warm again soon, okay?
All right.
I'll let everybody know again. Thanks, Howie.
Take care, Larry.
You too, buddy. Thank you. Bye-bye. Dr. Howie Knopf, everybody. That's K-N-O-F-F, but the K is silent. Like knowledge, okay, Howie Knopf, all right? And it's Project Achieve. It's projectachieve.net, and that's where you'll find the information on his course, which is called Designing and Implementing Effective Multi-Tiered Systems. It's just been launched. It's a web-based program, all right? And it's at the Project Achieve website, and this stuff is important. It is required by federal law, all right? So you're all involved in this. Let's make it happen. It'll help the kids, okay? Wow, everything's changing. Wow, we're going to do the best we can, aren't we? Good way to leave it on a high note. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org, and I hope you go over there and find out what we're doing with our Consortium for Equity. Enjoy our magazine over there, Equity in Access, and all our podcasts are there. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.